This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for keeping us in your day. And this is Spectrum West. It's about you, Western Wisconsin, your arts, the culture you provide yourselves. I'm Al Ross, and it's a privilege. Today, Kath Bakel comes from Australia, now lives in New York, near Nicole and Liz. Together, they form Eva, a trio of singers, songwriters, and musicians, bringing their stuff to the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls Saturday. Kath Bakel joins us via phone, and we'll sample the Eva sound. Jim Oliver's here with a delightful conversation he shared this week with Lucy Amundson, author of Locally Laid, How We Built a Plucky, Industry-Changing Egg Farm from Scratch. I think the title alone can predict the mood. Alan Nugent loves living in Stockholm, Wisconsin, and Stockholm, Wisconsin loves having him as a neighbor. He's taken a commitment to the arts to new levels with ownership of a Bode Gallery and Design, as well as the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center. Now he's being recognized with Arts Wisconsin for that commitment. We'll share the dialogue I enjoyed recently. What do you say we start with this? Friday night, the State Theater in Eau Claire will be filled with the sound of the blues, Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra style. Jeff Peterson paid us a visit to provide things that we should know. There probably are people out there who are, as of yet, unfamiliar with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra. Let's give them a little history lesson.
Oh, sure. Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra started in 2008.
Okay.
We're a nonprofit community big band focusing on performing really great big band music that often people don't get a chance to hear. Combination of entertainment and education whenever possible. We've got members from all over the Chippewa Valley, great jazz musicians, local educators. And the idea is to get together and have a lot of fun. We don't make any money at this, but we have an incredible amount of fun doing it. Big band jazz is not the kind of music that you hear in a bar. It's not the kind of music that you hear typically in a club anywhere in town. And so the opportunity to play that music has always been somewhat limited. Obviously we've got, the great jazz program over at the university and a lot of opportunities for people to play there. But in terms of once you get out of college, out of that setting, the opportunities were much more limited. And so we saw this as a chance to bring some of these people together and really do some great music, do some stuff that was challenging both for the musicians and for the audience, an opportunity to bring in some great guest artists, which we continue to do,
yeah.
Talented musicians from all over the country. And just sort of expand people's, idea of what big band music actually is. And there's nothing wrong with Glenn Miller, but what most people know is a fairly limited range.
Sure.
And this was a chance to really expand that quite a bit. And I think we've been pretty successful so far.
So have most of the people who were hungry 8 years ago to play in a bigger jazz orchestra hanging around?
There's always fluctuation. People take different jobs. Things
yeah.
happen. But
good core there yet?
Yeah. There's a surprisingly large number of people who have been with the band the entire 8 years. And many who've been with it 5 or 6 up to this. We had a little more turnover at the beginning, but yeah, there's a really solid core that's been around for 5, 6, 7 years. And I think that helps because it gives us a nice cohesion as a group.
So political scientist and drummer. How do those two go together? Where does that... you get rid of, anxiety, frustration on the drums?
Or? Something like that. No, I started out as a percussion performance major in college. I wanted to do jazz performance and composition. But after a little while, I realized that I just did not have the dedication to practice 16 hours a day in order to succeed. I love playing, but there were so many other things that interested me. And political science was the next logical step for me based on what I love.
Is there any similarity to political science and music?
Oh, I think there are a lot of similarities. I think politics is, in my view, it's much more about what you perceive than what is real. Right. And music
guess, yeah.
is all about perception and, mm-hmm. People hear different things in exactly the same piece of music. So I think that there are some very distinct parallels.
There's a lot of improvisation in politics.
There most certainly is. And there's a lot of improvisation in jazz, which is a good
yes.
That's probably why I like jazz more than other styles of music. So
yeah.
I like the improvisational aspects of it.
But you just couldn't put the drumsticks down.
I stopped playing for a while.
You did.
And then when I moved to Eau Claire, started teaching here, after a while, my wife said to me, you need a hobby. Well, I haven't played in a long time. And so I started talking to local jazz musicians, and everyone said, you know, why don't we have something like the symphony? We've got a community orchestra. Why don't we have a community big band?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of became the genesis for all of this.
Jeff Peterson, we're talking about the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra, which begins another season, a 2016-2017 season. It begins Friday night. Ladies sing the blues, plural, ladies.
Yes.
Tell us what Friday night's all about.
Well, the theme for our entire season, we're calling it the Year of Song, focusing on jazz vocals from a whole bunch of different angles.
Yeah.
And so this first show is really bringing out sort of the best of female vocalists in the history of big band music. We'll do some music from Ella Fitzgerald, Carmen McRae, all the way up through Diana Krall and other great female singers. We're bringing in four different guest artists to sing with us, which is a lot of fun.
No kidding.
We've got four different local jazz singers who are going to come join us, as well as Adrian Klenz will continue to sing a little bit as well. But the idea is to really feature some of the archetypal female jazz vocals, so the fast swing tunes, the stuff that Ella Fitzgerald used to do, some of the sort of more sultry things that Carmen McRae used to do, that kind of stuff. It's kind of a broad sweep across the history of female vocal jazz.
Solos, are they going to do an Andrews Sisters?
No Andrews Sisters stuff, but we've got all of them are doing some songs by themselves, and then they're also singing duets with
duets,
Adrian.
Okay.
So yeah, we've got four different duets so that Adrian has a chance to sing a little bit with someone else as well. It should be a lot of fun.
What time is it?
7:30.
State Theater. And then you're going to sing in the holidays on the 3rd of December.
Mm-hmm.
That's not too far away, so maybe you want to preview that a little
bit. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, we always do a holiday concert, or almost always. The holiday show is something sort of a tradition for us. And again, in keeping with sort of the season theme, we're going to focus very heavily on vocal jazz.
Okay.
So lots of opportunities for the audience to sing along, chances for them to participate if they choose to do so. A couple of great singers coming in again. And then February, we're bringing a guest singer in from New York, a woman by the name of Mel Flannery, who's actually originally from the Fox Valley area, but now works full-time as a singer out in New York.
I'm glad you said things like her and she, because I would have thought Mel Flannery was a guy.
No. Mel is definitely not a guy. I can vouch for that.
Okay.
And then the May show will be our all-male vocal show, the one we're calling Swooners and Crooners, and we'll do some Frank Sinatra, we'll do some Dean Martin, we'll do a little Michael Bublé, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's a great sort of, I think, across the board, a chance for people to hear some amazing singers from around the area and also to hear a pretty darn good band behind them. So
darn good band.
Darn good.
Not just pretty darn.
No, we're darn good.
Absolutely. Are darn good. The darn good assemblage is the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra. Jeff Peterson, thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks as always.
That's a bunch of information, but if you need or want more, you can grab all you want at their website, chippewajazz.org. The Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra, 7:30 p.m. Friday, Eau Claire's State Theater. Coming up, the story and music of Eva, coming Saturday to the Heidi Center. Jim Oliver talks with a lady who knows chickens and eggs so well she wrote a popular book about them. And it's featured in this year's Chippewa Valley Book Festival on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Minnesota Marine Art Museum, presenting plein air work by regional painters Tom Mockistad and Don Schmidlap, inspired by the Upper Mississippi River environment. More at mmam.org. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery influenced by nature, including tableware, vases, and cookingware. More at simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, celebrating Septoberfest this fall, presenting raptor programs, live animal shows, Native American art, and more. Details are at nationaleaglecenter.org/events. Well, the stages of Western Wisconsin are heating up for the 2016-2017 seasons, and here, with some details, is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Into the Woods through Sunday at the Oxford Theater. Escanaba in the Moonlight will be staged by Cumberland ETC next Thursday through Saturday and October 27th to the 29th in the Cumberland Arts Center. The Phipps Children's Theater will perform Mother Goose through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. On Golden Pond will be staged through Sunday by the Festival Theater in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The show will continue weekends through October 23rd. The Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will present Johnny Appleseed for school groups through October 21st. And the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson will stage That Love and Feelin', The Story of the Righteous Brothers, weekends through October 28th. I'm Jim Oliver.
Ah, Stockholm, Wisconsin, the bucolic little village that below the surface has a six-lane highway of activity and creativity and restless commotion within the people who live there and those who come when they need it. You don't have to explain it to Alan Nugent. He felt the vibe many years ago and allowed it to reel him in. His background is definitely artistic, performance, design, etc. He's proprietor of Abode Gallery and Design, partner in the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center, and among other distinctions, is now the recipient of the 2016 Arts in the Community Award conferred by Arts Wisconsin and the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. A transition from Colorado to Wisconsin. Tell me about that, because it appears as if you lived in a small town there, too. You're a small town guy.
I'm a small town guy, and I moved to Minneapolis many years ago to go to college. Stayed after I graduated, and I did a little bit of this and that, touring with musical theater companies and things like that, but ended up back in Minneapolis and was there for 20-some years. One weekend, we went for a drive on a lovely fall day and stumbled across this little town in Stockholm, Wisconsin, and was absolutely enchanted, so we came back a few more times. And before you know it, we were looking for a piece of property and bought a piece of property. And before you know it, we built a little tiny cabin on it. And We're down here every weekend and learned something that happens to a lot of people here, that you can't stand not being here. So we ended up moving down full-time and opening Abode in 2004, I believe. And it's just been one thing after another ever since.
I know the people are there, and certainly the natural resources serve as an inspiration. But what's the Alan Nugent take on why Stockholm and surrounding area is so special? We've touched on it a bit, but as it relates to the arts, both visual and otherwise.
Well, relating to the arts, there's honestly something almost magical here. That special something has attracted people over the decades with a very artistic spirit. You know, it was basically a ghost town up until the late 70s, and a few people started moving in, and most of them artists, a lot of hippies, and started kind of resettling the village. They brought with them this artistic character that survived all the way through all the changes that downtown Stockholm has gone through and the village has gone through. Mm-hmm. And we felt it immediately coming here. Not only do people create the art here quite often, but they are incredibly appreciative of other people's work and the arts in general. So that whole spirit really excited me. I've never felt anything like it outside of maybe my hometown in Colorado, Estes Park, where arts were just an everyday absolute part of life. You don't get that in a big city very often, and you don't get that in small towns very often, but it's happened here.
Well, art can be a part of everyday life in a big city, but stop long enough to notice it. As I was asking that question about Stockholm, the old joking line came to mind, "It's in the water." And then I thought, what a great slogan for Stockholm.
There you go. It's in the water.
It's in the water.
Can I use that?
You can use that.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
It's free. As long as I get a free T-shirt that says it or something.
We'll do that.
The Mississippi River. It's
it
right
is.
There.
So there's this conjoining of the water.
Yeah.
And the landscape, yeah. And all of these elements that led to bringing in the creative people who responded to that.
Okay.
And it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
So all we've done really is tap into that and embrace it.
Alan Nugent, he's proprietor of the Abode Gallery and Design in Stockholm, Wisconsin, and the winner, we're going to get to that soon, of the 2016 Arts in the Community Award. From Arts Wisconsin, your formal education, you touched on it a bit earlier, had a focus on theater and music before we revert to that aspect of Stockholm. I'm kind of curious if other than helping provide a venue, you're able to perform or whether that's even a preference of yours anymore.
You know, honestly, I don't now.
Okay.
I did it professionally for quite a few years, and when I finished the last tour I was on many, 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 many years ago, I sat back and thought, no, it's time to do something different. Over the years with our Performing Arts Center, I've done a little bit here and there, but the performing part's not my passion anymore.
Mm. Okay. And it's good to know what is your passion and what isn't.
We all
mature. You're centered. You're in a comfortable spot.
Yeah.
So you live, though, vicariously through a place called the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center, which
is... Oh, completely. Talk about the magic again. It's this amazing little space. It's the old opera hall in the building that we have the gallery. And when we bought the building, Kelly Tatum and I were dear friends back from the theater days, and she came down one day, and we walked up there, and I said, what do you think of this crazy idea? And she basically started crying. She was so excited.
Wow.
So we went forward with this crazy idea.
Cool.
So we're now season 8, I believe.
Yeah. I have yet to walk up those stairs. I keep hearing how cool it is. Every time I'm in Stockholm, for some reason, it's not open. And I don't. I'm not.
We'll have to work on that. We'll have to get you here.
Yeah.
You know, it's magical. I mean, there's nothing horribly over the top, horribly elegant about it. It's a very simple space.
Mm-hmm.
Seats about 125 people. How many towns have a theater that seats more than double its whole population? Not many. and most of the time, every one of those seats is filled now.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
You're a member of the American Society of Interior Designers. How are you able to apply those talents in Stockholm and surrounding area?
Well, there's a whole lot of ways that falls into the whole experience and background of being an interior designer feeds totally into what we do in the gallery and store, along with the other businesses in the building, creating an environment, creating a character, and same with Wide Spot, creating that element that made it feel like what it should be. So that design background, I mean, it's still a huge part of what I do. Our interior design business is a very, very large part of what I spend my personal time on, but the design field encompasses so many elements of the arts. We're always pulling together all of these different things. You know, furniture is art, and, you know, the literal physical art on the wall and the lighting, all of those are artistic elements. They all play into what we're doing here.
The award that's been bestowed on you is the 2016 Arts in the Community Award. It's presented by Arts Wisconsin in partnership with the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. It's a reading here, honors communities and civic leaders for championing the arts as integral to economic, educational, and community vitality. From all that I know of you and all that you've said, I'm guessing this award is pretty special for you.
Oh, it's kind of unbelievable. I mean, I know Arts Wisconsin well. I've been affiliated with them in many ways over the years, and what they do is astonishing and wonderful. And the town's association, their willingness to look at the arts as not a secondary element in a community, but a primary element, be a way of creating not only jobs, but a lifestyle. So to be nominated, I mean, for one, that was unbelievably humbling. And we had a few nominations from our area, from different people for different reasons, and that was probably the biggest honor I've ever had, even more so than the award.
What do you get for hardware?
You know, the luncheon is next week, so I haven't seen. I'm assuming there's a document of some kind that I'll frame beautifully and hang up in the gallery.
Speaking of gallery, you have an exhibit called Earth on right now. Tell us about that a little bit.
Earth is the last of six shows we did this year. They're all thematic shows based on some element of this place that we call home in this planet. This one is Earth, and it's all Earth elements. It's clay, glass, metal, stone, all things that are pulled directly from the Earth and turned into exquisite pieces of art. So it's filled with pottery and jewelry and ceramic art and an actual landscape installation right in the middle of the gallery.
Oh,
Cool. So it's kind of fun.
That's kind of like people bringing sand into their house to have a beach.
That's right. We did that. Black dirt.
Well,
yeah.
Good for you. That's up through November 7th, so that people have time to go there. Stockholm, Wisconsin actually bursts with activity. I mean, there are many reasons to visit. The art fair is huge, and it's quaint as heck to be able to say that you have 66 people. Are you kind of hoping that it stays at that? I mean,
no, we do. It's an interesting place. 66 people is the permanent year-round population, but about 60% of the homes here are second homes from people in the Twin Cities, from Rochester, from Eau Claire, La Crosse. And they tend to be very creative types, too. A lot of advertising people, a lot of film people, music people settling here as their second home and eventually their permanent home. So that's been exciting to see. It's something else here. It really is. You know, it's not just White Spot. I mean, White Spot has been this amazing glue that has pulled this community together in ways you can never imagine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the art strolls, the art fairs, the art tours, the art is in everything that's going on. It's amazing. The motto of the village is small village, big arts. So we try to live up to that.
From a marketing standpoint, the 66 population is kind of important. You should have a brochure that says we're going to keep it at 66. We have a waiting list, and if someone leaves, we'll let you on.
Yes,
but we
feel
have
free
to
apply.
We have to keep it at 66. I'm sorry. Alan Nugent, Abode Gallery and Design, and congratulations on the 2016 Arts in the Community Award. I think you could easily say that you don't experience Stockholm just once, because you do come back.
Well, there's a running joke here that be careful when you visit because you'll leave with the house. It happens a lot.
I'll bet. Alan, thanks.
Thank you very much.
By the way, Saturday at the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm, it's Rio Nido. I hope that's pronounced correctly. A trio presenting classic jazz and swing of the 30s and 40s. It's at 7 p.m. Tickets online at widespot.org. Jim Oliver reviews a book I think you'll find fascinating and fun to read, with an author to match, and later, The Music of Eva on Spectrum West. Here's some more Spectrum memos for you. Sunday, it's the first concert of the new season for the Master Singers. America, My Home, 2016, Hairston and Hogan. 2 p.m., Lake Street United Methodist Church in Eau Claire. Season and individual concert tickets available from chorus members at First Congregational UCC in Eau Claire and at Festival Foods, also in Eau Claire. The 7th Annual Eau Queer Film Festival is underway through Saturday at UW Eau Claire, featuring documentaries, feature films, and shorts. Schedule details online at eauqueer.com, also on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter. The exhibit Observation and Experimentation is on display through November 12th at the ArtReach St. Croix Gallery in Stillwater, Minnesota. The website there is stcroixsplash.org. Let's get in one more. The first of the new season of Ask a Scientist evenings is Wednesday, October 19th. There we go. 7 p.m. at the Acoustic Cafe in downtown Eau Claire. A Little Wave, a reprise of one of last year's popular presentations, kicks it off. Well, the Chippewa Valley Book Festival is all around us. Jim Oliver turned on his author spotlight last week, and this week he swings it on a book and an author with a wonderful, true story to tell.
The 17th Chippewa Valley Book Festival got underway this week and will run through October 20th. Among the authors making presentations on their books is Lucy Amundson, author of Locally Laid, How We Built a Plucky, Industry-Changing Egg Farm from Scratch. She'll be talking about her book at 3:30 p.m. Saturday in the Eau Claire Room in the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library. Lucy Amundson joins us from Duluth. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thanks so much.
Well, one of the early steps in developing your business was buying chickens.
You know, you would think it would be rather straightforward, but we didn't know much, but we knew we needed chickens. We looked at, you know, the places that were local, and, you know, you just can't go there and buy 1,000 birds. You just can't. especially pullets, because we wanted them to be raised to just short of maturity. We called up all the big hatcheries, and they would be delighted to fill our minimum order of 30,000. But that's not what we had in mind either. And we looked for months and months and months and finally found a guy.
Found a guy. That's always dangerous to talk about.
Yeah, and if you're starting a business, I would warn any listeners not to predicate it on a guy.
Yeah.
It didn't work quite as well, and painful lessons were learned. But it just showed us that being a mid-sized producer, we're in an awkward place. We're too big to be dealing with kind of local smaller businesses, and too small to be working with big ag, or as we call it, big egg.
Mm-hmm. Jumping way, way ahead in the book, you started getting some complaints from customers that the eggs weren't meeting your usual standards. And you came to the conclusion that your original flock of chickens had kind of played itself out. And so you needed to turn over the flock, so to speak. I was wondering if you used the same guy, or how did you go about doing that?
Well, our first flock, we kept for way too long. Mm-hmm. We kept for over 2 years, which is completely unheard of in the industry. But we really wanted to find a great, noble end for these birds, because they had been so well taken care of and well fed and exercised. People don't really eat birds like that. Those are stew hens. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you grew up with stew hens.
Oh, yes, indeed. Canned stew hens. Sometimes those are really tough.
Really tough. Like, you conveniently prepare them by boiling them for 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
So we were looking for a noble end. Normally, industry will get rid of birds maybe at 10 months. We just wanted to make sure we had the right scenario for them. We ended up working with a Hmong community that will take birds and use them for food, which is what we wanted. But now we no longer work with the guy, because the guy raised those chicks to industry standards, which meant that they weren't meant to be outside. In fact, they really had no idea how to be outside. When we brought those girls out, instead of being like the mighty foragers that we had seen in our home flock, mm-hmm. flies were landing on these birds. They were so piteous. It took them a very long time, but we did sort of reawaken their natural chickenness. And now we have someone who is willing to light birds the way that they will do well outdoors. Lighting meaning with bird lights in the winter and when they're very tiny, so that they don't go into, I'm not making this term up, poultry hysteria, which happened with our first flock.
It seemed from the book that you didn't exactly enter this enterprise with great glee.
No, I definitely was, and kind of still am, a reluctant farmer. It's not my training or background, or really my husband's either. But Jason, my spouse, just kind of became smitten with our backyard birds and really wanted to do more, and thought the eggs were so great. Everyone should have access to eggs raised in this manner. He laid out this plan for me. I had no idea this was coming. I would like to tell you I was supportive. But what happened next was the farm argument.
Well, so neither of you had a farming background other than the backyard chickens?
Our ancestral families did, but we ourselves have been cubicle-bound keyboard jockeys. We're of the service sector. We write things and, mm-hmm. and organize things, and suddenly we were doing things.
She is Lucy Amundson, author of Locally Laid, How We Built a Plucky, Industry-Changing Egg Farm from Scratch. Why did you decide to take the organic route?
Actually, they're not organic.
Well, they're not.
Organic is a status of feed, so it's what you feed them. And we initially absolutely thought we were going to do that. What we've quickly realized is that it's very difficult to get consistent organic feed. And even more so, we were just shocked that so much feed in this country, the organic feed, is imported from China and India.
Mm.
And that didn't feel like the spirit of sustainability that we were going for. So we use non-GMO feed grown by people in our region. What that does is that it creates, the ag economists would call it, value chains, so that we are hiring neighbors to grow corn. We use our local feed bin to grind it, mix it, store it. And we've built our own egg washing facilities, so that way we are getting in on the washing and packing. And we do some, not all, of our own distribution. And what that does is creates this economic vitality that swirls around a region. Honestly, we feel like that is probably more to our values than importing corn from 6,000 miles away.
So how did you develop a customer base?
You know, we just started telling our story. Honestly, it's not like I went out one day and like, I'm going to build a brand. But that's kind of what happened. On Facebook and other social media, blogging, I was just talking about our incredibly humbling pratfalls into this industry and how difficult it was and making fun of ourselves. And soon there was a following, and people just really started responding to what our values were. Low food miles, we plant a tree with every delivery, animal husbandry. And honestly, I was really clear about how hard all of this was on our family life. So it was very easy for it to develop into a narrative nonfiction, given all that it really seems like it's about chickens, but it's about, you know, love and marriage and fights on driveways and making our food system better.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about how you were able to go to graduate school, work as a freelance writer, and develop a pretty broad knowledge of the technical aspects of egg production.
Sleep is so overrated, Jim. Jason was the primary farm worker, and later on his brother became very involved. And I was doing some of the off-farm income, because 88% of a typical farm's income comes from someone not working on the farm. And I had already registered for graduate school before the farm flare-up happened for Jason. And I wasn't going to let that go. Unfortunately, is Hamline University 2.5 hours from where I live. But I made that commitment 2 days a week for 3.5 years. And I'm glad I did, because this was a master's in creative writing nonfiction. And Locally Laid, the book, is actually my senior thesis.
Mm. You apparently traveled quite a bit getting an education on poultry production.
Oh, yes. Jason had gone to visit some farms in other parts of the country. But when I started getting really on board with the farm is when I was starting to see that whole swirly economic vitality thing I was talking about. That sector is called middle agriculture. And I got geeky excited about it and started reading academic journals, USDA stats, and books. And one of the books was written by Dr. Stuart Smith in Maine. And I went out and visited him and really got an understanding about not just how the food system is broken, but why and how we can actually make it better. I also, when I was there, went to a poultry conference where I dissected a chicken. I learned things from that experience and gives you a whole new respect for the bird.
Well, you joke in the book about making tens of dollars in profits from the business. What do you see the future holding for your enterprise?
We now work, and this happened in the book, we start working with partner farms, which is really contract production with open contracts, and everyone knows exactly what's going on with our contracts. And what I see happening is the growth of contract farming around this in a way that farmers do better. Typically, farmers don't do very well in the sale of their raw products. Sometimes as low as 9% of an agricultural dollar will go to a farmer. We do much better by our farmers. They're making in the 25% range, which is a better margin. And farmers need margin to cushion for the good years, the bad years. So my hope is that more of that is going to continue to happen. Right now we partner with 7 farms. which allows us to sell something in the range of 9,000 cartons of eggs a week. And I'm really happy that people are able to get these pasture-raised eggs because, honestly, I truly feel it's a better egg. We say our girls are salad-eating poultry athletes because they're out there exercising and eating a broad diet of bugs and seeds and frogs. And I think that you can taste the goodness in the eggs themselves.
So what is your favorite part of this whole process?
I really love interacting with our consumers. I get to do that a lot on our Facebook page. We have a big Facebook presence, or on Twitter. And I love going to speak at college classrooms and libraries because people are interested in food in a way that they haven't probably been for a while. There's like this agricultural zeitgeist. I love talking about it and seeing people connect to it and maybe have some light bulbs go off in their heads. That's really an honor and a privilege. Probably second best is standing for hours on end washing eggs. I listen to a lot of podcasts during that time. And in some ways, the repetitiveness of it can have zen-like qualities, and you know you're just washing eggs when you're washing eggs, and you can think, and I think I wrote a lot of the book while standing there.
Well, the book is Locally Laid, How We Built the Plucky, Industry-Changing Egg Farm from Scratch. The author is Lucy Amundson. She'll be giving a presentation on her book at 3:30 p.m. Saturday in the Eau Claire Room in the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. Lucy, thanks so much for talking to us, and thanks for writing the book. It was great fun for an old farm boy like me to read.
Oh, thank you kindly. You know, I try to make it as fun as possible, because who says learning about the food system shouldn't be a humorous romp?
Well, I really got tired the first part of that, reading the book, because the hours you were putting in and the grief you had and the first chickens who came were being tossed out of their cages into the ground. And
survived
and some didn't.
It can be quite dramatic.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's the kind of conversation it's fun to listen in on. And the book, destined to be a classic. Remember, for a complete lineup of remaining Chippewa Valley Book Festival events, go online to cvbookfest.org. And thanks, Jim Oliver. We'll get to know one of the voices in Eva, a sound you won't forget, coming up on Spectrum West. Did you know that support for WPR comes from GreenRoutes.org in collaboration with Explore Minnesota, an online directory to on-farm dining, events, and sustainable businesses from local vineyards to pizza farms. GreenRoutes, that's RoutesOrg. And spell it, because some people say roots, you know what I mean? Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Fall is in the air with the music of Mozart and Brahms in the Viennese Autumn Concert, October 22nd at UW Eau Claire's Gantner Hall. Details at cvsymphony.org. Here's a Spectrum memo. The exhibit Metal Places, Metal People, featuring Mark Blasky sculptures and Dale Luthy photography, is up at the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. It'll be up through November 11th. The website there is eauclairearts.com. Speaking of Eau Claire Arts, next Tuesday evening, it's the music of Travis Tritt at the State Theater, and Friday the 21st, Leo Kottke comes back to play his guitar.
I've been drifting, ground's been shifting, sun's been burning, the water's churning. If I had known before I caught it, I'd never have caught it now. I'm in too deep, those promises I'll keep. Bottoms too steep for me to anchor my feet. sinking. Air's been choking. I'm up to my chin.
Eva sounds like a beautiful name for a lady. Actually, it's a beautiful name for three ladies, Liz, Nicole, and Kath. They sing, they play, they write, they travel to Wisconsin. Saturday, when they arrive from New York to do their thing at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. The Kath in the trio is Kath Bakel. Before we talk about the group, the event, and the venue, let's get to know our guest a little better. You're an Aussie, but the bio I read said you're now based in New York City, although you physically live in Tarrytown, a beautiful kind of burg. Is that considered New York City?
Yeah, Tarrytown is this gorgeous historical village about 40 miles north of New York City. It's actually originally based in Brooklyn, but you know, being from Australia and growing up in the rural area in Australia, northern Victoria, I grew up on a farm and I was really looking for that small town village community lifestyle and came across Tarrytown and I've been there for the past 2 years now.
A farm to Brooklyn is a bit of culture shock.
Yeah, and actually by way of Israel too. I lived in Israel and Jerusalem for 3 years.
Wow.
In between that time too. Yeah, it's been quite a diverse mm-hmm. 10 years, last 10 years of my life.
You're pretty musical. Back in Australia on the farm, did you have a family that was into music? Did you get a real good musical education, or where did music become so important to you?
My parents grew up listening and playing a couple of instruments, but they listened to a lot of music. As a kid, they exposed me a lot to the likes of Joan Baez, Judy Collins, Joni Mitchell, Eric Clapton, Van Morrison, Bee Gees, Beatles, and my father was heavy at one point as a late teenager. He was in a group called the Bow Street Runners. He played guitar, and he was in the Battle of the Bands, and this was in the 60s.
Sure.
And he had his old Rickenbacker that he now regrets selling.
I'll bet he does.
So my father was really, really into music, and my mother, too. She played a bit of piano and was a little musically inclined. My father was the one that really, if he had the opportunity, I think he would have tried to have some kind of career.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up taking over my grandfather's business and played it safe.
Ah, sometimes but, you got to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I grew up influenced by a lot of the music that they used to listen to.
Sure,
and
sure.
Then at age of four, I started piano. And then by the age of 15, 16, I started actually writing poetry, and that's what got me into lyric writing and singing, and I wanted to accompany myself, so I picked up the guitar. Actually, at the age of 8, I started playing drums.
You know, it might be that people don't know a lot about the Australian music scene. Maybe the didgeridoo is all they're familiar with. But Little River Band, Men at Work, AC/DC,
mm-hmm.
In Excess.
Yep.
Other iconic groups have come from down under. Do you have groups or individuals from there that you consider as your influences as you developed as a musician and songwriter?
Absolutely. My all-time favorite Australian artist is John Farnham. He had a hit called You're the Voice, and I believe it was a hit in Ireland and the UK and Scotland. But in Australia, he is considered the Billy Joel of the United States. He is a phenomenal rock vocalist, so I was very much influenced by him and also another artist, Renee Geyer, who would be the sort of the female equivalent, I guess. But she was heavily into soul and blues. I was heavily influenced by those two. I had a bit of a fusion there.
Uh-huh.
I love the traditional folk. And then I also loved a bit of that rock sound. So you can really hear it in my music,
mm-hmm,
especially
mm-hmm.
in my solo projects, but it has infused a lot with Eva as well. And the other members of the group, Nicole Zoraitis and Liz Simmons, you know, we brought together three-part harmonies, but we're also multi-instrumentalists. So we had a lot of diversity with our sound. We could really infuse pretty much whatever we want.
Kath Bakel is on the phone with us. She's a member of Eva. That's a trio. with, as she mentioned, Liz and Nicole. They're coming to the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, Saturday evening at 7:30. You write, you sing songs, you play the guitar. You're listed as a percussionist, as we said. Nicole plays piano, and she writes. Liz plays the guitar. I have to believe that the planets were beautifully aligned when you guys discovered each other. How did you, and when was that?
Yeah, so the group has been in existence as this formation the past 2 years. It starts out as a joke, actually. There was an Australian and American that walked into a bar, and literally Nicole and I met in a bar in Park Slope, and we just hit it off straight away, just personality-wise. We hit it off, and we met through a mutual friend. And then she said, "Oh, you should come and hear me perform." And I said, "Okay." When I heard her voice and her songwriting, I was blown away completely. She's a phenomenal blues, soul, pop vocalist. She's also heavily rooted in jazz as well. And then about a year later, we discovered Liz Simmons, because originally there was another member in the group who was an Irish woman called Aoife Clancy. She's the daughter of Bobby Clancy of the Clancy Brothers.
Wow.
And it took a different direction in her musical career and was replaced by Liz. She is American, however, she has performed with a lot of great Irish musicians. She knows a lot of people in that scene. She was performing as a double bill with us, and when I heard her voice, I thought, oh, wow, she sounds a combination between Sandy Denny and, a little bit of Emmy Lou Harris there as well. She has a bit of a country slant. When we met her, Aoife was leaving, it just felt like a perfect fit, even though our voices are very different and very distinctive.
You've been sharing the stage with some pretty cool folks like Livingston Taylor and Tom Chapin. Everybody remembers if they were around in the 70s. A lady named Melanie, she had some cool hits.
Yeah.
Saturday night at the beautiful, historic Heidi Center. I'm curious what's on the program. Tell the people who are coming what to expect.
To be there as a trio. It'll be a beautiful, intimate setting. We share stories of our background, and we also, have a few jokes that we like to tell, and we really engage the audience in really getting to know who we are. And a lot of our music has very strong messages. That's one thing that we really identify with. We're not just musicians performing on stage singing pretty songs. We really have something to say. So lyrically, I think people will be able to take home something that may touch their heart in some way. And I'll give an example. I met one woman by the name of Mary Kurtzak, who's an Indigenous Australian. She's a native Aboriginal, and she went through what was known as the Stolen Generation, where the young Aboriginal children were taken away from their mothers and put into camp scenarios, and really stripped of their identity and culture. And I had the fortune of meeting this woman about 5 years ago because I wrote a song called Orphaned by the Color of My Skin, which is based on her book. She's 72 years old and she never met her mother until 50 years later. There's one thing that's very significant is, any culture that has gone through an atrocity like that. She's kept a very positive spirit, and now she basically says, "I forgive what happened to me back then, and I accept that it happened." And now she travels around Australia talking to students in schools about her experience, and she's one of the very few people still alive that are doing that. That was something that was very important for me, being a white Australian and knowing about the history of the Aboriginals. And I grew up with the Yorta Yorta tribe in Australia, and I really connect to the Indigenous people's way of life and their viewpoints and belief systems. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. thought that this was just a beautiful bridge between a younger generation and older generation.
Well, folk music, it's been categorized as a music of the people, and it's storytelling, and it also carries with it a responsibility, and it sounds like you guys are accepting that responsibility and doing it very nicely. Kath Bakel, member of EVA, thanks for being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're going to listen to some of your music.
Wonderful. Thanks, Al. Bye-bye.
With the veil over eyes, she cast all the flowers to bed. Hydrating hydrangeas and roses with tears instead. She sang for the lonely. Then led down the street, by chance she had happened to meet a quirky fella who danced with his two left feet. He danced for the lonely.
The marvelous sound of EVA, three pure voices on stage Saturday night at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls. If you want tickets, the website is cvca.net. And the phone number is 726-9000. Wow, that's good music. Spectrum Memo National Speaker Deborah Zhang Stein presents Beyond Labels, Disordered, Special Needs, and At Risk at the UW-Eau Claire 8th Annual Schneider Disability Issues Forum, 4 p.m., October 20th. That's next Thursday. Centennial Hall, free and open to the public. Heidi Center, in addition to EVA Saturday night, you can hear the old-timey sound of Paper Moonshiners Friday night. Cool. Next week, a new CD from a fairly new group in the neighborhood, a real melting pot. We'll take a look at the Flyway Film Festival that's happening next week, and more, always more on Spectrum West. News releases about Spectrum West are always greener, thanks to Sammy. Debbie does daily duty delightfully, and Dean, well, he's our hamster in the wheel, keeping everything turning smoothly. I'm Al Ross. This has been Spectrum West, and it will be Spectrum West again next week. Thanks.